Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Rob Watson. I've got another fascinating guest to speak to today. Her name is Jo Dunn from Kindred Birth. Jo is a bona fide birth nerd who has undertaken multiple doula trainings over the years to become a birth keeper. She believes giving birth unfettered by the constraints of hospital systems, fear, and the stories of others is a woman's birthright. Today, she supports women to birth their babies in their power at home. By elevating the needs of women as they grow their family and transition into this phase of mothering is at the heart of her work as a birth keeper. Okay, well, firstly, Joe, really appreciate you taking the time with me today to chat on my podcast. If it'd be really good to just get a bit of an understanding of what it is you've done, a bit of your background and your journey that you've gone on, it'd be amazing.
Thank you, Rob. It's so nice to be here. I've been a bit of a fan for a while of your podcast, so thank you so much. Yeah, I'm Jo. I am a birth keeper. No one ever knows what that is. I'm a trained doula. Maybe people will know what that is. Sometimes they don't, but I support women to give birth. I support with them leading up to birth, with education. I go on call for their birth. I'm there at the birth. And then I support in that really delicate postpartum time. So yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell of what I do. I trained twice as a doula because once wasn't enough. And then I trained a third time with a program called Radical Birth Keeper School. And a lot of what I do now is to support free birthing communities. I do also sometimes work alongside midwives as well for mums that want home birth midwives. And yeah, I decided 4 years ago, thanks to COVID, that I was no longer going to work in the hospital system. And I've actually moved away from kind of using the word doula because for me, the word doula now is really saturated with this idea of being a savior in the hospital realm and saving women from, terrible birth outcomes and trauma. I'm not here to save anyone. I would hope that my presence and the education that I bring leading up helps women to really dig deep and, create the kind of birth that they want. And having me there is really as someone who is a gifted person who's seen lots of birth, not as someone who's going to oversee their birth or tell them what to do. Or in any way, kind of bring any medical experience in it, because I am not medically trained or clinically trained, but really there as a professional birth companion in that traditional sense.
And what was the sort of inspiration for you kind of going down this path? Because I believe you were was it like a nanny, was it back in the day,
Yeah, I
going
was
back?
a nanny, a maternity nurse. I did a psychology degree and did nothing with it and, got into debt. pushed myself to go to uni and really didn't need to. But yeah, a dear friend of mine, I nannied next door to another nanny in London and we become good friends and she became pregnant. And very sadly, when she was 5 months pregnant, her partner passed away. He went to play football one day and Stephen didn't come back. And so a bit of a baptism of fire. She asked me to step in and be her birth companion. And honestly, like such a gift because it really was my calling, which I never knew. I supported her through 36 hours induction. And it was a baptism of fire, but it actually culminated in this beautiful water birth. And Stevie will be 16 in June. Which I cannot believe I'm saying those words. She's about a foot taller than me. She's incredible. And I just had no idea about this other world that existed that's far from our eyes unless you're actually in it or giving birth or with, or a midwife. You don't, this whole idea of birth kind of happens away from everyone, doesn't it? And the only things that you hear about are trauma, really. But I was there. God, I mean, I really did know nothing, honestly. We went to a few antenatal sessions, me and my mate, and kind of laughed our way halfway through them. I didn't take them that serious. They were terrible. We didn't take them that serious. And, we kind of went into it a bit, with very little education. But it turned out to be an amazing experience. And the midwife that was there on the day, who was the head of the department in Chelsea and Westminster, said to me, "Are you a doula?" I said, "It's ridiculous. No, I'm from Liverpool." She went like, "Was I from somewhere?" And I was like, "No, I'm from Liverpool." No sleep, by the way, after like 2 days.
Yeah, for sure.
And I said, "No, what's that? Should you need to go home and retrain? And if I don't see you back here as a doula or a midwife, then you've not taken on board, because we could do our clinical thing and you just got on and supported like a doula, like you know what you're doing." It's like, okay. So I was like 2008, went home, Googled it, and then this whole world just appeared before my eyes. Within a year, I trained, got cold feet, because it's like you do the training and then you have to go and acquire a mentor, and then it's this whole recognition process that you have to go through, and it just felt overwhelming. Press pause, went back into it in 2010, I think, and then started the mentorship, which took me 2 years with an incredible doula called Mars Lord, who's now a birth activist, who's really big in the sort of birth world. And yeah, it just kind of opened up. It kind of opened up a portal, really. I don't think the same way as I did after experiencing this birth, but also after kind of opening up my mind to this aspect of life that I'd never witnessed before, or this information I'd never thought about before. It was life changing, actually.
It sounds incredible, and it's interesting, isn't it, how an event like that, a tragic event for a partner to husband partner just doesn't come back one day, which is hugely traumatic. But in those times, you to step in there, and all of a sudden, like you say, it's your calling and shows up. And it's often, I think, people are going looking for the calling, don't they? But then in your case, it literally just, that it unfolded and shown its way for you.
It was like a karmic bitch slap. I mean, honestly, it really was. And so much gratitude for that soul who stepped away. That's how I feel. And then to kind of, to absolutely open up this whole other world that has, left me constantly asking more questions. You don't do this role, and then you just kind of go, "Oh yeah, that's how it is. I'm just going to navigate that." Like, it really opens up this thirst for knowledge of, I mean, so many things: feminism, patriarchy, pharmaceuticals, food, movement, meditation. I mean, it really spans a whole entire spirituality, so many things. I question so much of it now, whereas I might have gone along before, because that, that's kind of what most people do, understandably.
Yeah, it's a system we're born into, isn't it? It's the culture, society, everything. We're told one way. And it's also, a lot of it's been like we've handed over our power. And in many ways, the journey is actually taking back ownership and authority for our own lives and our families and everything, and not being scared to challenge a status quo and make decisions that will feel right for us.
Absolutely. And this is the big piece with birth, is taking back what we inherently know, innately know as women, as birthing women. We've really outsourced it, and it only took about 100 years for doctors to sweep away all of the wisdom and knowledge from midwives, to take over and tell women when they should give birth, how they should give birth, that the physiology of giving birth, and it should be on a bed on their backs, and to just kind of sweep all of that away has really curated this idea that we can't give birth without medical help. And it is really about taking back that power. And actually, pregnancy really offers that opportunity for women. Sometimes women will contact me and they're a bit interested about home birth. My website speaks that I only do home birth, and so my inquiries have like gone a lot quieter. You can imagine, only 2% of women in the UK give birth at home. And so the women will call me and they might be a bit on the fence or a bit interested in home birth. And then there'll be, during our conversations, there'll be a light bulb moment where they're like, I know this. I know that I can do this. I know that I have to dig deep and uncover my fears to be able to put one foot in front of the other. And I've seen literally women go through their pregnancy experience, approaching their birth at home, and they've literally come alive. It's fundamentally changed them because they know that they are preparing for something that is big. And yes, they can do it because their bodies are meant to do it. And yet they are having to fend off all of the information and the cultural detritus of the outside world to say no and stand in their power and their sovereignty and say, no, this is how I'm doing it. And it honestly changes something within them. I've seen women, I was at birth on Saturday, it has changed that woman for unbelievable amount. I mean, you can just see this presence of mind and this confidence just arise from her. Like she said, she's still high from Saturday. It's changed something and it's shifted something and it's created this expansiveness within her. And when you're birthing in a hospital and you're being told to lie on your back, you're being told your baby needs to be induced because your baby will die if it doesn't, and your potential to have this expansive experience is completely quashed, then something really, that opportunity is totally lost. It's
Yeah,
crazy.
100%. And some of the things you're talking about then, I remember, Mark, because we've got two girls now, and my wife, first after giving first birth, she actually said she felt like she was reborn. Like that was her. That was like her, you know.
Amazing.
It is absolutely incredible, and you see the journey that they go on. And it is, you know, it's a big, like you said, about only 2% of births are at home. And how is that? No, I'm interested about that number. Is that fluctuated? So is there a little bit of a renaissance? Is that, do you think that's, it's going to take a while for that to get to like say 5%, 10%, but is there a bit of a shift back? Like, has that been lower? Has it been down to 1% at some point? It'd be interesting to.
Think so, yeah. I mean, I think it's slightly rising. I mean, I work in a bubble, don't I? So in my mind, everyone home births and everyone breastfeeds. That isn't the reality in the most of the UK. But what we know about that number is it doesn't take into account the free birth population, because a lot of the free birth communities are also navigating their pregnancy completely outside of the NHS anyway. So we don't have figures around that. So it probably is a bit more.
Yeah, it's obviously going to take a shift to get back up, and it does just come back into this, the conditioning. And you see it, not only does it just come from the medical thing, you see it just all you ever see on TV. The only time you ever see anyone give birth, they're on the back and they're screaming.
Hooked up to
And
a machine, always got to be hooked up to a machine, screaming. There's always a medical emergency. There's always bleeping going on, and wires and mobility isn't a thing. It blows my mind. And in the scenes that might be kind of period dramas or your Game of Thrones-esque type thing, there's always a death. So there's this kind of cultural programming that informs us that it's risky and someone might lose their life. And yet that's not what I'm seeing. It's not what most birth workers are seeing. In fact, I'll go out on a limb and say, and I'm sorry to any of the midwives that are listening now, the easiest births that I see take place are within the free birth community, because they are not being constantly disturbed by medical obstetrics in their home. Even in the home, women are not safe from obstetrics. So we have home birth midwives, and I know a lot of them, and they're incredible. And I know they went into it with a good heart, and they mean well. But their first responsibility, or their first onus, is to hospital protocol and policy and licensing over you as an individual birthing woman. And it doesn't matter if you're pushing your baby out and you've taken longer, they will insert their guidelines right there and then as you're pushing your baby out and just inform you there and then. or inform you that, your waters have broken X amount, and so now we need to do, instead of being able to be completely present in the situation and know as a midwife that things are going okay and that you can always take a view on it, because you know as a midwife what things look like when they're not going okay. And it's not just about hospital policy and guidelines and timings and graphs and measurements. So yes, I do support in the home, and a lot of the time it is with, medical midwives, NHS midwives. And in those births, I have to be on my A game, but not looking like I'm on my A game, because I know that I'll have to advocate that bit harder. I know that I'll have to use my negotiation to push back that bit harder, because there's nearly every time, even with, home birth with medical midwives, there's always a, oh, we're just concerned about, oh, we're just worried about the time, oh, we might just have to. Midwifery is an art, and it's an absolute skill that you, the people, women craft. And it's through observation, and it's through feeling it, and it's through intuition. And, we're eroding that. We're eroding that beautiful, essentially art form, human art form of being able to know when it's time to do something because we do need medical help. Or it's time to sit back. Yes, that guideline says the woman can only push for 2 hours, but she's a first timer, and who gives a shit about the time?
Exactly.
Because who knows what that baby's doing in there? We can maybe just sit back and allow things to happen, but we've slowly allowed obstetrics to encroach itself even in the home birth space.
Yeah. Reminds me of the second birth that we had. Our second daughter now is 7 months, and she was born at home. Water broke sort of Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, and midwives come out to check on it. And but how it was with their policy was they were like, there was no kind of water broke, but there wasn't much movement. And they're basically saying, well, if nothing's changed within 24 hours, you can't have a home birth and you'll have to come in. So in my wife's head, she's like being strong and saying, and I well basically obviously how it to an extent, I remember the lessons I got from the first birth to the second birth is for the men at the role of a man, the role of the dad in that role, of course, with the doulas and the birth keepers and stuff, is like I'm the got to be the keeper, I'm guarding that cave, and anything that questions anything's got to come, come via me, and I'll only pass on information that needs to go. But this information got passed on to her when we were together. So my wife is there at home thinking, okay, she's trying to get in a calm place. She's listening to relaxing music. I'm taking my other youngest daughter out so she can just be in a nice space to try and to start the contractions and movements coming on. And then, and obviously things weren't moving. So in the back of her head, she's thinking, oh, well, the midwives won't come back out. They, it won't be able to have a home birth. Thankfully, it all worked out fine. The baby, our little girl was born 3 a.m. On Sunday morning. But that was just the one thing, well, one thing in that moment of thinking she didn't need, we didn't need that, she didn't need that extra, because the woman needs to be in a calmer place for her body to relax. Any tension can slow things up and not put the into the place where you've got the, the love hormone flooding through rather than the fear one.
Absolutely. And she shouldn't be wrestling with protocols on the day that she's going into this hugely expansive situation where she's been asked to bring new life into the world. Women are besieged with, this policy and protocol. And then instead of being out of their mind to go into their body and letting the body literally take over, they're now having to be navigating policy on their phone. Oh, what does the NICE guideline say? Rob, can you look up? This is, we're literally meant to be having people in their space together. This is a whole family thing where she feels the most safe at home with you as her protector and absolutely the gatekeeper there present. Not so you have to start looking up NICE guidelines or hospital policy or putting together a text where you're having to be combative. And this is happening all the time. And I think people People who are on the fence about having a home birth, it's very like, oh, well, it'll be so much easier at home, and most of the time it is. But when there's those little pinch points of when, birth doesn't work in the exact optimum way that obstetrics defines it to be, don't have your waters break before you go into having contractions, can't have that. Don't go over your due date, can't have that. And then when those things are brought in, the woman has to start getting cerebral. We don't want that. We don't want that as birth workers. We literally want, if you see me come into a birth, the chatty scouser that you've got to know during our sessions together has gone. I barely talk to you, talk to the dad. I'm crawling into rooms on my hands and knees in pitch black. I probably won't even be making eye contact with you, maybe not. I am the smallest person in the room, and the woman will know that I'm there, and she oftentimes they'll kind of come over to me and lean on me or whatever, but it's never about me inserting myself or telling her I'm here. Midwife on Saturday that I was with, two midwives wanted to go in and introduce themselves. My client's reach and pushing phase. I've got her in this pitch black room. I'm just going to go in and say hello. No, you won't. You won't. Sorry. Well, I'm just going to say hello. It's like, how are you not understanding that this is a scenario where it requires the most amount of privacy, other than when the baby, how the baby was made? This is another part of that spectrum where absolute privacy and non-disturbance is key, and it's not considered anymore. What is considered is the values around testing, ensuring how dilated she is, knowing how long it's going to take. We've got this obsession with trying to define everything in this kind of, science mechanical way. It doesn't work. It doesn't work for every woman. And it was put together by male men, physicians, hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, like you say, true midwife is that wisdom and knowledge that's being passed on for thousands of years along the way has been stripped away, like many other things that have been stripped away the past few hundred years. And now it's we have to unlearn all this conditioning. And I know that you've mentioned that in on your website about you guide people to unlearn the cultural narrative around birth. It's just, yeah, it's a big, it's a big eye opener. And you can see, like, I get frustrated at times and I have to just take a breath because, you suddenly go, what? That's what? That's the way it is. And, that's not the truth. It's not the natural way. And I've got a big thing about us getting back to our roots and remembering who we are. And it comes back into that stuff we're saying about, reawakening that self, that innate power in us. And it comes down to remembering.
Yes.
Around remembering ourselves of who we truly are.
Remembering. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And it's a beautiful journey to go on. And that's why, in many ways, I shouldn't be frustrated with the outside world in some way, because in a way, that is helping me to remember, because that's part of the reawakening, the relearning of stuff. And it'll enable us to, help to rebirth, hopefully, a new world, not just all these new children. I know you mentioned in your site about peace on earth starts with birth.
Yeah,
So, good place to start.
it is. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like these little souls coming through really deserve peace, and they really deserve that the atmosphere and environment that they are born in, this part they've been inside, this cosseted, warm, watery world, and then they're ejected into this world of bright lights and, sometimes a little bit of panic around them. Adrenaline, and that can be that stress can be really buffered with it being a really gentle birth, or it being a birth with a baby straight into the mother's arms, or it being a birth that hasn't been hammered with pharmacological drugs throughout its labor, where the baby's actually chosen its destiny to be born and the timing of it. Where all those physiological factors have come as an interplay and they've worked in harmony, because that's how it's meant to be. When women birth their babies, they go into spontaneous labor without any outside measures. There's a huge neurobiology that takes place, isn't it? I mean, it's phenomenal. You've seen it twice. You'll have never seen Ruth in that way before. There is an absolute, it's mammalian, it's primal, and it really deserves it to be not disturbed in any way, shape, or form. And given the kind of credence and kindness that it deserves, instead of kind of pushing women through this conveyor belt that the majority of us see our cousins, sisters, friends, your sisters go through now, it's the same scenario every single time. And I think rather than, I think where we're at now is, rather than kind of these, female-led communities sitting together around the fire, if you were, going through their birth story and the sister was with them and sort of going, oh, wasn't it funny? And didn't she? And wasn't it amazing? And then the baby, but all of that. What we have now is trauma bonding stories where women tell their horrific tales of how birth was robbed from them, how it was injurious, how much blood they lost, the baby ended up in NICU. This is so prevalent. And those little souls that have come through have witnessed their first few minutes of life with violence, with the instrumental deliveries, with suction on their head. And for the most part, I'd say for 99% of those babies born that way was absolutely unnecessary. Absolutely unnecessary, because a healthcare provider cannot wait, or a healthcare provider has a question mark about something. It really blows my mind.
Yeah, they're very much in the worst case scenario mode all the time, aren't they?
Very.
And I think it becomes in the train. I did hear something about training to become a doctor and a nurse. So there's so much, it's traumatic actually the training for them because of all the data and all the information that they get fed with. It's kind of no wonder that they are. And then they're in that environment and they do see worst case scenarios, but it could be one in 10,000 or whatever the numbers are for stuff. But unfortunately, it's just a shame that it's kind of everyone's treated as if that because they're probably concerned about the blowback in many ways.
It's litigation, but the problem with I mean medicine at large, yes, that's what you're saying is absolutely right, but the problem with obstetrics is you will have doctors that have never seen spontaneous birth. They've never sat on their hands and just watched this incredible mammal do their thing. They're only ever seeing orchestrated births that they are designing inductions or instrumental or operational birth C-sections. They're only ever seeing them orchestrate it, and so when that happens, it largely is a traumatic event at the end, because the baby gets distressed, the mum gets exhausted, she can't feel anything because she's got an epidural. Then it's a race to get the baby out rather than allow the baby to be born. And all the time they are minimizing women's mobility by asking them to lie on a bed, which minimizes their pelvic canal by at least 35%. I mean, there is no logic. There's no logic around it, but because they are constantly seeing it, they're caught in this echo chamber. And even when good evidence research comes in, it takes 17 years for them to even take that into account. And if it doesn't really, if it doesn't imbibe with the culture, it'll get kind of pushed aside. But you can guarantee when evidence comes in that exonerates them given inductions at 39 weeks, or says that all black women should be induced because it's safer, they'll run with that.
Yeah. And when you talk about the trauma stuff, it makes me think about like the amazing work that like, Gabor Maté has done over the years. And I actually had a guy on my podcast a few years ago, and he ended up having to have an operation when he was a few days old. And because they think that the child doesn't feel anything, he's not getting any pain relief. And all of his 10-year heroin addiction that he had everything that he went from, he could actually eventually piece it back to that one moment of when of that traumatic surgery that he had under no anaesthetic at the age of like 4 days old or something. So obviously that's extreme to an extent, but even the element of, you know, the instruments that they're using, I think it's just considered like it's like there's no consideration for like it's fine. They'll be fine. It's always like they'll bounce back. Kids are resilient, and yes, they are. You know, the human body and the human condition, and how strong we can be is phenomenal. But we shouldn't discount how the traumatic event can have on our psyche and the imprint. And another one is, you know, it ties into, you know, like the body keeps the score, which is 100%. And you wonder why there's so much trauma coming up in young people or every generation, to be honest, because we look at it's not just down to, but it's the whole picture.
It's the whole picture. The thing is, you know, it's not just that one life event with the birth, but it's then what happens to the mother after birth. Then that interaction, has that baby been separated from the mum straight away? Quite often, yeah. Has that baby had the full complement of its placental blood? Often not. You know, we have paediatricians in the room now that say, oh, you only need 2 minutes, so there's that cut off. Then we see this whole scenario where quite often after a traumatic birth, women struggle to breastfeed. And then you have further down the line within those first 6 months, the rates of postpartum depression are now unbelievably through the roof. And because the body needs to go through this seismic shift, and it's, you know, predominantly done through the hormonal blueprint, isn't it? You know, our mammalian body will allow us to kind of orchestrate it. When a woman doesn't go through that huge shift with the hormones, the body will say, what happened to the baby? I was carrying a baby here. What happened to it? When you don't go through that normal sort of birth situation, the body feels that disconnect. And so I know a lot of practitioners will say they reckon that's where postnatal depression comes from, because you haven't gone through that huge complement of hormones.
And just coming on to what you touched on about the cord clamping and delaying it, like the data around that and the information that can show that leaving that in, like we are on the second birth that we had at home, it must have been at least 30 minutes afterwards, and I could the midwives were getting impatient. They were like saying, you know, we need to thing. I'm like, no,
We don't.
just leave it. Some people, some I know in the maybe the free birth community, they only can leave it for a day or more, can't they, or longer, or. And just keep that connection, and obviously just allowing. And I think I remember seeing a study about the benefits of that child, like when they were 21, how much more stronger and resilient they were for their health,
Yeah.
just because of that.
Stem cells. I mean, it's not just blood that's going through this. It's iron-rich blood. Obviously, and a third of the baby's blood is in that organ, that placental organ. When you're cutting it off at 2 minutes, which is a completely arbitrary number anyway, surely the baby should be the one to decide that when the cord goes completely white and flaccid. That's a good time to cut then if mum wants that. But you know, stem cells, there is an incredible amount of good stuff, for want of a better word, that fortifies this new life outside of the womb. And yet again, we want to, you know, when scenarios where women are being called to expedite things, the same thing that, you know, birth Sama, oh, it looks like it stopped pulsating now. It's like, well, it hasn't. And where are you going, midwife? Do you need to be somewhere? You know, we're here in this birth, you can leave it. Sometimes I'll say to midwives, if the placenta's born, you can leave that. We can do that later. And I have cord. I don't have those big plastic cord ties. I have like crochet things, because I don't like these big plastic things digging into babies. But I know everything is this kind of this race to expedite things.
Yeah, and even as well, the lack of support post-birth. You know, it's literally like you're in, it's almost like you're in the system, and then the baby's born, and they've got to do a couple of checks and balances. And here's the thing, obviously, the people that we work, you know, you see some real angels as well, you know, the midwives and the people, the nurses that we see, the people, particularly the women that work in the hospital, not so much the doctors. and that could be male and female doctors in some regard, real angels. Like, you can see that, that they're doing their absolute best. Unfortunately, the system lets them down in many ways, but that it's like the thing, you know that 99% of people in the system are wanting to do the right thing. It's just
Yeah.
unfortunately the system needs to improve. But yeah, the
Yeah.
support after it, particularly our first child was born in October 2020, so the country's just gone, the world's just gone back into another lockdown, and it was just like, here you go, baby. All right, that was it. We could,
Right.
yeah. We could have grandparents, that was about it. And yeah, an element of that, because your first chat, nothing for me, nothing could expect prepare us to becoming parents first time around. Your life is just, it is a rebirth ourselves, but life was a doddle before we had kids. And it's so much work. So yeah, it's a huge thing, but I do think there needs to be better things in place. And I assume that's what you also offer as well, is that
Yeah.
support afterwards for however long the mum and family needs it.
Yeah, absolutely. My day-to-day life is going to visit mums that just had the baby. So, typically I'll be going in sort of, 2 to 3 times a week, and then they'll have me at the end of the phone as well. And you'll know yourself with your first baby, you're second guessing everything, and it takes a village. But then it's like, well, where's the village? It's like, go forth, you've had your baby, and you need that kind of, you want to find your confidence, but it would be nice to have someone around that is there to give you that good information, that is there to kind of buffer you and go, this is okay, don't worry, no questions too silly. So what I do is I go in, it's normally about 4 hours each session, and I'll just literally answer questions. I'll hold the baby, pack them off to bed. It could be an hour until baby wakes again for it, but at least it's that downtime. I'll cook, food, and then I'll bugger off and see them again in a few days. And if they've got questions, I'm at the end of the phone. And that's kind of how, I guess that's kind of how communities were in the past. There'd be several people you could lean upon. My dad was the youngest of 11.
Wow.
Which was born in 1950, and we're always like, oh my God, how's grandma do it? How did grandma do it? Grandma did it because sister lives down the road, her cousin's in the next. There was all of those people just gathered in, brought you food, took the baby so you could have a sleep. There wasn't all these stresses of these one or two people doing everything. The stress on that family and the pressure. And no, in modern times we have this thing of like, oh, we'll go and visit this new family. It's like, no, you'll go and bring food and then you'll go. You're not visiting. No one's hosting you and they've just had a baby. It's far removed from what the needs of that, integral new family actually need.
Yeah, we now know anyone that has a baby now, we are sending them food packages.
Absolutely.
What do they need? They need someone to come and help them tidy up.
To wash on.
Yeah, not to come round and get expect someone to make you a cup of tea.
Mind blowing.
100%. Yeah, it makes me think about, you talk about stuff. I had a did a podcast with a gentleman recently, and he talks about how there's been a real attack on the family unit over the past century or more, just to, the way we live. We used to live in communities of 150. Everyone would know each other. You'd have 40 aunts and 40 uncles. It would just be this environment which was just enable people to thrive. It wasn't like, here you go, live in your box, two of you, and you've got all the stresses of stuff. And it does feel like, you could talk about, it's amazing that now, for instance, whatever time, women go out to work, which is amazing. Everyone should be able to go and choose where they're going to work. However, now you can, two incomes aren't as even as good as what one income was, say 30, 40 years ago. One income, my wife, dad was a teacher. They had five kids, lived in a big house. They were able to have a good life. When now, to have five kids on one school, one teacher income would be near impossible.
Absolutely impossible. Absolutely impossible. I think the whole modern society, industrialized communities have pushed this idea that individualism is the way to kind of, is progression. Now I sit here as a woman who has reaped the benefits of feminism. I'm a single woman. I've got a partner, but I'm not married. I've never had children. All of those things, I've reaped those benefits, let's say, and no one looks down at me, do they? They couldn't care less that I don't have kids. And I also know that this kind of, it's capitalism essentially has eroded kind of the family unit by pushing women into the workplace and deciding that it's their productivity that is the thing that is progression, rather than acknowledging that women are the life bearers. That is their ultimate productivity. That is where the creativity is. That is where creation comes from. So why don't we have a entire society that is protecting that? What would that look like? I'm sure it wouldn't look like women desperately scrolling, trying to find friends on the internet. I'm sure it wouldn't look like fathers trying to set up communities because they feel like they're losing their mind in this small family unit. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't look like the rates of divorce going up in married couples. I think I read an interesting thing recently that rates of divorce are higher in couples that have experienced birth trauma. I mean, that's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
But we're really kind of getting it wrong from the get-go, as far as I'm concerned, because if we can create structures that really allow families to be and to be supported and to not have to get on this constant treadmill, I think the world would look and our communities would look like a really different place. And you wouldn't have teenagers constantly trying to seek ways outside of the family. It'd just be a given that this family grows and the community around it grows. We wouldn't be throwing our elders out into these, homes and going to see them once a week. They'd be an integral part of our home and our community. But birth and death is completely on the same spectrum. And yet we treat it like it's this annoying, unhygienic, problematic scenario.
Yeah, we've got our values wrong, 100%. It's put on, like, for instance, Ruth will feel it. She's been able to pretty much not really work for the past. Well, she's a trained counselor now, so still has some clients occasionally. Not at the moment because when baby's 7 months old. But hasn't we've been in a position where she's not had to go back to work for 3 years, full time, or to do stuff because we're like, well, that's what we value. That's. But she finds it obviously challenging because she sees, well, what on the outside world, women, birth isn't championed. Being a mum, and a staying at home and looking after and nurture your child. But to be honest, I think it's the best thing we can possibly do for the future generations to build them foundations of make them resilient, make them feel more comfortable in the skin, make them feel like they've got really strong bonds with the family. So yeah, I think it becomes about values, doesn't it? And it's also your intentionality and what you and we can st we can. It's more difficult, but if you are clear on what it is you want, it's possible. It will unfold for you. You just
It
have to be
will.
able to learn to choose it.
I think it's radical responsibility. I know that's like a phrase that's bandied around a lot. But
It's
I
true.
do think it comes down to that at the end of the day. I think, and taking that radical responsibility, whether it's around medicines, whether it, we've all seen it during COVID, whether it's being boundaried and saying, I don't need to tell anyone my due date or where I'm giving birth. It could go on and on and on. You can fill in the spreadsheet there, right? But once you kind of take that step into kind of only looking at your life from a radical responsibility way, then you don't allow those in outside, things to crush you like they used to, because you know that you're not making the same choices as everybody else. And I'm not tied to a 9-to-5 job or, a 7-till-6 job working for some posh family in Kensington. where I'd have, a recurring income and all of that would be dead easy, but I'd be really miserable. And that's it. It's taking that leap of faith that you can make those decisions for yourself, or as you do for yourself and your family. And even when things make you go, oh, should we have done that? Actually, when you push through the other side, much like there, the rewards around it is like it's quite phenomenal, isn't it? In sometimes micro and sometimes macro ways.
Yeah, it's holding there's been really challenges for us the past few years where I've been like, this is gonna can we do it this way? Is it gonna work? And it's just like holding the line and being like, yeah, we can see through this and it's gonna, we'll make it through, even if things are tough. And they are, it's tough. Being a parent is tough. Life is tough. This life is challenging. And I think maybe in some ways a lot of us have we just want things to be comfortable. At what cost do we want things to be? Of course, we don't want to be constantly challenging all day, every day, but we have to push ourselves 100%. And that, as you said, ties into that radical responsibility and doing uncomfortable things. I think there's something called, is it the comfort trap or something? And how we need to do things that challenge us each day. Like for instance, when I get in the shower, I finish with a cold shower. I don't want to do a cold shower. In January, I don't want to be put in the cold, but I'm like, there's this guy called David Goggins, and he just pushes himself to the extremes. And I pretend I'm him. I'm channeling him at the end of my shower. I'm like, come on, I can do this. I can do this. And I'm
David
like,
Goggins,
I don't want to do it. Of course, I just want to stay under a warm shower, but it's doing those things each day that you can push yourself to get out your comfort zone.
it's kind of like these little minute resilience, little resilience. You don't have to do a decathlon, but I think this is the thing with comfort. It's like we've become so comfortable in outsourcing everything, and birth is a big part of this. Women and women come to being pregnant, and their entire lives they've never tracked their cycle. Potentially, they've never learned about the functionality of their own reproductive system. I certainly didn't. I mean, I went to school in Wavertree in the 80s. They dragged the telly in. That was our sex education. It was a complete unlearning for me and for many women. We come to these crunch points in our life, whether it's pregnancy, whether it's pre-menopause, like myself, or we don't understand the functionality and the physiology of our body because it's been, we've kind of opted out of it from an early age. And there's points where, we don't want to deal with the things that are unhygienic. We don't want that discomfort. And so we choose things that seem to be more comfortable, like aligning with an obstetrician or a hospital birth, because hospital birth must be safer, right? It's in this glittering cathedral of safety, or as I like to call it, a giant laboratory, a hospital. And yet it robs people of these huge, expansive, seismic experiences. Because you are outsourcing your perception that it's going to be painful, that it's going to be yucky, it's going to be blood and every poo and all of that. Yeah, it's going to be all of those things. It is. And there's no app on your phone that can deliver your baby for you. It's not Deliveroo. Can't Deliveroo your baby. And this is kind of, where we are. We really are at a very, I mean, when I started training, Michel Odont, who you might be familiar with, is a French obstetrician. He wrote a book saying, I think it's called, read it years ago, Humanity in the Future of Plastics. And he's an obstetrician that doesn't support birth in the hospital. He walked away from obstetrics years ago. He's a home birth person. And he's basically saying that we're kind of on this precipice of outsourcing our capabilities as women to birth to a hospital higher order, and we're going to lose that capability because it's an oxytocin system that we're looking at. Our neurotransmitters for oxytocin go up from 2,000 to 8,000 as we're gearing up for birth. When you reroute that and have an induction or a C-section, something happens to the body. And so, he's posturing that potentially 50 to 100 years, we can't give birth anymore.
Wow.
Well, British bulldogs can't give birth because I think at the turn of the century, they were a prized, animal. Every a person had, not every person, but aristocrats had British bulldogs. It was, a prized animal at the time. And to make birth safer for these prized animals, they gave them C-sections. And so they can't functionally give birth any, they will die. And, I'm not saying that women are British bulldogs, but I'm saying we need to really look at this in terms of our mammalian system, because this hormonal system and the ability to produce it and go through it has a functionality for us as women going forward. I spoke to a woman the other week who had been on birth control for 30 years and couldn't understand why I was so shocked. I was like, but what happens when you go through, she's like my age, she's like 47. What happens when you go through menopause? Or she was like, well, yeah, I don't know. There's an absolute disconnect because she's lined up with this idea that periods are messy, they were painful, or whatever it was. I'm sure she has her own reasons, but has glossed over that with a pill that in her mind does what it needs to do.
Yeah, and it's just a standard protocol, really, isn't it? Interesting. We when we were trying to have a baby, it took us a while. It took us about 2 years to actually get pregnant. And as we're going through the earlier process and stuff, like neither of us knew that there was only a small window each month to get pregnant. In school, you kind of the fear is put into you that if you have unprotected sex with anyone, you're gonna have a baby. You're gonna have a kid when you're 16, 17, but it's actually there's only like a 2, 3 day window where you might be lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. There's like a something like a 2 to 6, I don't even think it's 6 day window where you are fertile enough to get pregnant.
And even in that, there's a peak moment where you want to be able to, it's really it's kind of bewildering the lack of education.
But it doesn't mean we shouldn't, I mean, we should really be telling people the functionality of their body. I mean,
100%.
it's kind of like we teach sex education that men are kind of like dangerous because he can make us pregnant every day. And, that there's not much in between that. It's like, and then, you'll go on birth control at, age 18 or whatever. Women don't even know certain, the kind of ins and outs of their cycles. I mean, I didn't until about 10 years ago, didn't understand the kind of ins and outs of my cycles. And now I'm having, different levels of understanding with regards to sort of walking through menopause and whenever that happens, and it can be really scary. And if you've kind of never had those conversations or done that deep dive on your own reproductive system, pregnancy is a big learning curve, isn't it? Because you're having to then, get up to speed with all the things, how labor can start, what that looks like, how it can feel, blah, blah, blah. Because we're not around women in labor. Again, it goes back to that kind of community thing where, if it was 100 or so years ago, Ruth would have seen her sister's given birth. Or a cousin's given birth, someone in the family would have been a midwife because, every person in the family had a midwife. It was just an elder of the community that had seen a lot of birth and so got really good at it. But we're very divorced from that now, and so everything happens in these kind of like pressured time zones, isn't it? It's like you're pregnant, got to learn everything about it. We want to have a natural birth in inverted commas. And so we're opting to do this. And, oftentimes it's not enough because the work that people really need to do around it is on themselves. I say to people that I, prepare with birth, it's like, I can tell you every area of birth and your midwife can as well. We can go into the weeds about birth physiology, the hormonal blueprint, that this, that, and the other. But it's not going to prepare you in a way that's going to help you unconsciously unplug from the outside world. That's not going to help you make decisions that work for you and your body. What's going to help you is mindset and unlearning and having those conversations about what safety is to you, getting really clear about where your fears are around theft and where that comes from. So my preparation, yes, I go into everything about birth physiology. That's a no-brainer. But it's really trying to get women to unlearn and get really conscious about where they are fearful and how they can hold responsibility for themselves and what that looks like. And also the big story is where they have gleaned their knowledge of birth, like we said before, is it from TV over the years, those tiny little snapshots constant over the years that you kind of have running in the background. Is it because your mum constantly reminds you of how traumatic her birth was? Your cousin had a birth the other week and it sounded like a shocker. All of those things we collect over the years.
Little memories, little splinters that go in, don't they? And then they just stick in there every time you go, no, best safety first, safety first. Do you think there's any ways of the current system changing here, or does it just have to be more of a ground up kind of outside building our own kind of communities to sort of what you're doing and other people are doing?
Think so. I got into being a doula, many years ago, and went in it with the gusto. I was gonna change the system, and midwives, many midwives get into it doing that as well, and some of them done pioneering work. I don't want to throw them under the bus at all. They've brought in some incredible ways of thinking and ways of supporting, but it's a juggernaut. I mean, you're up against a juggernaut, and that juggernaut is fundamentally being funded by big pharma. People hate it when you say that, but I know that we have this kind of like benevolent, idea of the NHS as being our, free, it's not free, savior of all things medical. But it's a business at the end of the day, and it's being it the actors in it. The doctors in it are being, their education is coming from schools that are funded by pharmaceutical industries and the technocracy that underplays most of how women give birth now, the monitoring, the scanning, the screening, the, you name it, all comes from that same place. That's not going to die down. But why is it since 10 years ago, there's now more screening for women? And yet, less traumatic birthing. That's only going to go. What we seem to need to screen for every single thing now. It's insane. So, no, I think it's going to, the pushback is going to come from these communities, these kind of, grassroots communities, I think. And we are going to have to walk that fire walk as well, because we're going to get it in the neck. We do get it in the neck. We're really, how could we possibly walk with women through this birth experience without a semi-surgical unit on hand, without a medical midwife on hand? That's insane. And yet, it's much easier.
It's people knowing that a question is stuff or want to know that they can be supported in another way, and there is a different way, and there's a way that is natural, and it's just how we have done for hundreds of thousands of years, and that's why we've existed as so long. And the thought of the what you're saying about British bulldogs, the way that they can't, if that's the trajectory of some things, it's concerning. But then there's also there is a shift, there is a shift, and I'm sure there's other countries around the world, probably poorer countries for one, that are have not been taken over by this.
Captured. I mean, the thing is, I do think that kind of doctor-led thing is growing. You see, obviously, America is the kind of, paragon of obstetric-led care in the world, and yet we see their statistics are insane. More infant and maternal more mortality and morbidity than some so-called developing countries. This is in, scenarios where women are having doctors from the, telling them that they are pregnant, walking with them through that entire journey, and then going on to have either, a very intervened with medicalized birth or a C-section. And you would think with this kind of, our perception of safety that they would be the safest women in the world. Turns out not so much.
Well, in America, they must spend trillions a year on medical side of stuff, and you'd think that they'd be the number one in the world at stuff, but often that's the case. So, when you talk about big pharma, some of the shocking statistics about stuff, how like the number, like I think the number one leading cause of death is cardiac arrest, second is cancer, and then third is actually either prescribed drugs or treatments through that system. And you think, what? And it's like, and obviously we connected through the interview I did with Dr. Richard Halverson, who's from Baby Jabs, which is all about giving new parents greater choice when it comes to vaccination for the children. Because if you look at how the schedule has changed over the past few decades, a child would be given for 30 injections, or well, a dose of 30, in total of 30 in the first year. And you think it's almost like straight away, it's like, right, okay, we need to get them on this course. And it's just like, it can just be like, hang on a minute, back up. It's like if you get a cancer diagnosis, hang on, wait a minute, I don't have to rush ahead to have chemo. I can, there's choices, there's other alternative routes that we can go down. And it just comes, like you say, about taking radical responsibility, becoming empowering ourselves. And the great thing is, through the internet and through podcasts and through everything, we can find alternative ways which we feel more aligned with. Like, I know when something lights me up, when it feels like truth, and because inside that this feels right, because it's not driven by fear.
Absolutely. It's a whole body yes, isn't it? It's that whole body yes. It's like, this, I know this to be true. And that's what I say to, women when they're navigating their, it often comes towards the end of their pregnancy when, they're being told that they need to end their pregnancy because, they're going to go over their due date. I say to them, when you're thinking about making that decision, is that a whole body yes? Or is it coming from that place of anxiety and outsourcing and not from you at all? When you think about the kind of how an induction or whatever it is you're being postured, it could be something more, lower down the rung, benign than that. But does it resonate with you? Does it feel like a really good choice to you? And if it does, that's what you need to do. And it could be having a C-section. I have no problem with, like, it's not down to me as a birth keeper to define women's choices or their experience. It's really down to them to do it. But I think so often, nearly all the time, their job is to absolutely tune in to themselves as a mother and into themselves as, this person who's bringing new life into the world and that responsibility.
Yeah, 100%. We're working, obviously you did the radical birth keeper school. You went through that, which is like a process of unlearning and stuff. Is that for basically if anyone who actually wants to become a birth keeper as such, or do you look at, or is there, courses that mums can do as well, or pregnant mums?
Yeah, I mean, there's a plethora of sort of courses that people can do. If you're looking to go down the doula or birth keeper route, oh gosh, there's like a million places online that you can do that. Radical Birth Keeper School is very, it's a bit of an outlier, so it's very radical. I mean, it tells you what it does on the, and it, lots of people who really want to support that kind of pregnant birth phase. For mums who want to, and this kind of conversation is lighting them up, I would say engage with a doula, engage with a birth keeper. I do one-to-one birth coaching, and so I support through pregnancy over many weeks because I don't think it can be like a 2 or 3 session thing if you're not having an in-person doula to walk with you. I think it can take weeks to kind of really unlearn from that programming. So I offer programming, not programming. I offer coaching, to expectant parents. And yeah, I think it's just sort of aligning with those people. There are many sort of birth activists online now that offer those kind of courses. Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing about the online space, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's just about choice, and it's just about it's empowering choice for people. Because I think some people think, "Oh, I can't do it that way. Maybe I'll, you know, that isn't the way to do it. I'm not allowed to." People might think, "I'm not allowed to do it that way. I'm not allowed to have a choice," you know. And I
Yeah,
think,
that as well. And I think we have these kind of ideas of this like Earth Mother trope, you know, oh, she was really like an Earth Mother, wasn't she? That's why she chose a home birth. She's always been like that. It's
well,
like,
when we had we were choosing to have home births for both of ours, like we had people like, "What, you know, what are you doing?" Like, it's really, and obviously I have compassion for them, because I understand that they've just been, you know, they've drank the Kool-Aid as well and thought that you know, it has to be in a hospital, because, you know, what happens if you have a stillbirth? What happens if there's complications? What if, what if, what if? And the more research we did into it, realized actually, especially for your second child, it is statistically, it's safer to have a home birth than it is to go into hospital. Because especially if your first birth has gone fine, natural birth, then your body, you're going to be safer, more comfortable, everything in your own environment.
yeah, statistically it says that. I mean, the issue that I have with that statistics is that we're kind of telling women that, not that you are, but those statistics kind of lead us down this idea that, you know, you must be safer in hospital. Well, the thing is that you really kind of want to get it right for your body the first time round,
Yeah.
so that it's exponentially easier the second time round, and you're not having to sift through, as a couple as well, trauma, because it can be really, really traumatic. This is the reason I stepped away from working in hospitals. I literally had become a professional bystander to trauma. I really had. And you know, it took COVID, another cosmic bitch slap, to go, you don't need to do this, Joe. This is your calling, but you don't need to do that. You don't need to be, because I was saying to women, I can support you so you can have a brilliant, a wonderful birth experience anywhere. I don't believe that's true anymore. I really don't. I think if you are fundamentally choosing to birth in a hospital system, that's absolutely up to you, but you are choosing to have a medical experience and that might be right for you. But typically, it isn't right for birth.
Yeah, 100%. So where can people find out more about you?
They can find me on Instagram, which is kindredbirth underscore. And they can email me, so either to work online or if you're in London in person. And I've just about started the heinous thing of TikTok, which is basically for my coaching work as well. So I'll just be talking about being a birth coach on TikTok. So there'll be some nuggets on there. But yeah, drop me an email. I'm always happy to arrange a discovery call.
Sounds great. Well, I'll be sure to include all the links to that into your website, which has got lots of good information about you and what you do. Joe, really enjoyed this conversation. I'm sure we can have another one at some point in the future, around two, which I often do with some guests.
Love
So
that.
I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.